Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away. So it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
We're giving away the secrets to our method of digitally and physically finding big bucks on public ground.
This mini-series is powered by Onyx, and we deep dive into what we look for on a map, how we scout it in person, and what pins we use to help us effectively hunt deer.
This is
Public Pins. All right, guys, today we're going to talk about literally what is probably our biggest tip for map scouting and finding a legit place to kill a deer on public land. Okay, like it is literally the best thing that we have found. There's a deer right there in the ditch. That's not what we're going to hunt, though. This is called a secondary creek crossing. It literally is a way to put deer in front of you, and that's what we're all trying to do. But yep. Tyler, what is a secondary creek crossing?
So I have in the past called them feeder creek crossings. So the way I look at it is you have a big creek system. A lot of these public lands are put in place around creek systems or lowland areas because that land is not necessarily worth a whole lot. It's floodplain. It doesn't grow grass for cattle. It doesn't grow crops very well because it gets flooded. It's real hard to tell what's going to happen in the spring, usually around these places. So, but what it is you usually have some kind of a creek or river system. And for us, and for the sake of what we're doing today, we'll talk about these kind of creek systems that are named creeks a lot of times. And then feeding in to these creeks are other smaller creeks that usually, say you've got a creek running east and west, your feeder creeks will be going north and south, and they'll be feeding water in as a drainage into these creek systems. So that's kind of what they are.
Really makes them a great place to hunt because what do deer do?
They hang out around creeks and they travel up and down them a lot.
That's right. And they don't cut across, they don't cross the big creeks that often.
Right.
But they do from time to time. But what they do almost on a daily basis is cross secondary creeks.
Yep.
Because they want to go to point A to point B, whether it's bed to feed or if it's bucks cruising for does or whatever. We found that it's a really fairly easy thing to identify both on the map and on foot. You really just have to follow deer trails to places that you see a secondary creek on the map. You know, you can either have, like your Onyx map, you can have it on topographical mode or on hybrid mode and see the little, usually they're broken blue dots that show, or broken blue lines that show secondary creeks. And it's a great place to hunt. It's a great place to hang a trail camera to get, you know, area data about what deer are in there. And even, you know, we've gotten people on those cameras too, and it's shown, you know, what kind of pressure has been around. We've both set up on different places where we have been real close to killing deer and ended up, you know, having something else mess us up or whatever. But the first place that we found that was this way was a place that you have a lot of history with. Right?
Yeah, yeah, TR is what we call it if you listen to the main show. And, you know, the another good way or another tip to find these particular places, you know, is obviously to use your hybrid mode on your Onyx where you have topo lines and you can see once you learn to recognize, you can see these little feeders coming in, because a lot of times you can't see them on the aerial because of the tree foliage and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you've got that kind of blocking. And even on the main stem creek, sometimes you may struggle, but you can also turn that on X onto the, it's just topo mode. Mm-hmm. So there's no like aerial footage or whatever, and it shows blue lines for creeks. So that's another good tip to help you find out where the main stem of a creek
and
is.
Even
so
like if there's not a blue line there, the topo line is going to make a little V, and the V points upstream.
Yep.
in that situation. So you might just even see it's just like a little draw almost, but the deer is still going to find a place to cross that.
Yeah. And so when you have a pretty major creek that carries water most of the year, maybe, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 feet deep, something like that, a lot of times, like Casey was saying, the deer are not going to move across that creek all that often. They will. They will swim. They'll get pretty wet even during the cold months a lot of times, at least in Texas for sure. But they will travel up and down this creek system. So it really helps you out when you go to locate and then hunt one of these places, these feeder creek crossings, these secondary creek crossings, because you have a pretty good idea of what direction these deer are going to be traveling, right? And so like I said earlier, if it's an east and west creek, these deer are going to be traveling east and west for the most part. And so they're going to be crossing these feeder creeks. And a feeder creek could be very small. Mm-hmm. And you know, and we're going to give some anecdotal evidence here, and I'm going to talk about TR a little bit because you prompted me into that, but you are going to also talk about a feeder creek that's really pretty small, you know what I mean, that you've hunted a lot, and that we both have hunted a lot, but you've had some pretty good success there seeing deer and stuff. But anyway, this place we call TR, it sets up, it's got a big creek system, pretty steep walls, and, you know, just... It carries a lot of water for most of the year, even during the dry months. It hardly dries up. I don't know if I've ever seen it completely dry. And so this creek that comes in, you actually found this creek crossing in their scouting one day. We've done a lot of hanging around this place. We've shed hunting through there. We're trying to find a buck that we called Teenager. I don't think we saw him last year. It was the first year. We've been following him since he's about 3, and I think he would have been 7 last year. We didn't get a chance to get him on camera or
anything.
He's
no longer a teen. He is geriatric for sure.
I think he is maybe dead.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've spent a lot of time in there, and we found this Feeder Creek crossing. And essentially what we've got is like there's not just a ton of woods between essentially a pasture where that creek tops out and the creek system. And so you've already got like a smaller section there that's going to neck them down some, right? And then this feeder creek has a bunch of junk in it, like somebody piled a bunch of junk in there at one point, and then also like some bodark trees and stuff like that in the creek that create a huge like just barrier essentially and push deer really close to the creek there. And so there's maybe 2 or 3 places that we've seen deer cross right in this small section, but one of them is the spot. I mean, like... you're going to see 90% of the deer come through that spot. And so we had good deer on camera there last year. Like you said, we had people on it.
Yeah. I hunted it last year and saw a piebald deer.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a video of it and everything. It's on the YouTube channel if you want to go check it out. But anyway, you know, that's a place that I've hunted a lot. I came real close to killing there one morning. I actually, you know, usually you think a squirrel is a deer, and then you're like, ah, oh, dadgum squirrel, you know? I thought a deer was a squirrel in this case and didn't get my stuff ready in time for them to run past me with a little buck chasing them. And anyway, but you have had some good hunts,
man,
over at a place we call Babylon.
Oh, yeah, man. I've had some real good hunts at Babylon, and it's a place where you have a feeder creek that actually kind of runs into a bigger body of water.
It's a small creek, you know.
Yeah, it's tiny until it's not when you step in it and your boot goes up past your knee. But for the most part, we kind of hung the stand in that there's one really great tree to hunt out of there. And the deer just kind of have to make it around the bend. Like, they're just going to cross, like, either 40 yards away or a lot of times, like, 8 or 10 yards away. Mm-hmm. And they just end up right there. And that's kind of, it's almost bordering something called a DMA, which we'll probably also talk about on one of these shows one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
But that really, in that specific spot, is a secondary creek crossing. And another one that I found this year that I really, really liked. This is one, and let's, you know, be straight about this. The one of the issues you're going to run into with this idea of a feeder creek crossing is still that age-old idea of which trail is the right trail.
Yeah.
Right? Because you still have the problem of, you know, they're going to cross up there. They're going to cross back here. And I ran into that a lot this year. I would set up in this one spot, and then they would cross down there and vice versa. And you have to really kind of play that game of chess and figure that stuff out. But still, I found this place because we were seeing really good rut action, kind of more out on the flat, not so much kind of in the creaky stuff. And then that action sort of dried up, so I decided to push on in and try to find some better places. And sure enough, there's a really good secondary creek that had about three different crossings. And, man, I was so close. I had a shooter buck come in after shooting light on me in there and grunt right at the base of my tree and just chase does around. It was crazy. And it just happened to be just a little bit too late. But I almost shot two other bucks in there late season as well because they were pretty much moving bed to feed in there. And it was a really, really great hunting place that more or less ran out of time on. Season ended on me before I could make it happen. But I was just real, real close. And man,
I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that particular location, it's a super big flat. The whole area is very flat. And I feel like that it causes that secondary creek, or some of that secondary creek area in there, to wind a lot. And but like in most places, what you'd want to do is be pretty close to the main stem of the creek.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, right there you're also dealing with some creek horns, which we'll discuss in another episode as well, that kind of coincide with that secondary creek.
Mm-hmm.
And you're dealing with some irregular deer movement because right there they're actually transitioning from following the main creek to kind of heading out to pasture to feed.
Yeah, working so, through just vast flats of cedar,
yes,
elm and
exactly.
stuff like that.
But which, there's still like three really main crossings on that creek that spans 250 yards or less.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, and to be quite frank, I found that thing probably around December 18th. So imagine if we had that knowledge for all season. I'm sure next year we will. And I know exactly where to go back.
And we could hunt three guys in there.
For real, with the right wind, you could. And I think that's a big thing to think about with these type of accesses. You're going to really be hunting a lot of bed to feed when you're hunting these feeder creek crossings, I think. You know, or at least deer moving from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to think about where point A is and where point B is in relation to that the wind direction is, and you don't need to approach and walk past or through your deer to get to your feeder creek. You need to be coming from the downwind direction the whole time to get there. Now, there is like an aspect of water access that we didn't really discuss on this, and I think that we found a new place this spring that we might use water access to hunt a very similar spot.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, you know, most people are going to be using, you know, foot access to get to places. So that's something you really need to consider when you're talking about hunting a feeder or creek crossing or a secondary creek crossing.
It's interesting that you think of it, because I think of it a little different. You think of it, there's some turkeys right there.
Finally.
You think of it as, those might be geese. You think of it as bed to feed. I think of it more as rut.
Yeah.
I would feel more confident hunting it during the rut, which, you know, TR, we kind of do know that there's a bed to feed pattern there. You know what I mean? So like over there, I am essentially accessing that spot based off of the fact that I'm pretty sure I know where they're bedding, or where they're at least feeding at night, not necessarily where they're bedding. But I would feel very much like I rely a lot on rutting movement to actually for sure pull deer all the way back past me from that feeding, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I feel like they might bed on the other side of, you know, on the feeding side of you there.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think that, you know, either way, I think that you could stand a really good chance. You know, if deer, if bucks are running up and down a creek during the rut, checking for does, it's a pretty good spot to be too, probably.
Yeah, so. Man, for sure. Now, let's talk a little bit about how you'd kind of denote this on a map. I think whenever you're doing your map scouting at the house and, you know, you're looking around for this stuff, we talked about the little Vs, the little blue dashes that show the secondary creeks along the main creek, right? And whenever you see that kind of stuff, it's going to be real hard to, unless there's just, you know, maybe it's through open country, but it's going to be hard to identify where the deer trails are. But you can always probably identify a secondary creek that you can walk and find the trails, right? Mm-hmm. So what you're probably going to want to do is just do that whole white hot thing that we talk about where you, you know, hold your thumb down on the map and it brings up an icon, turn it white, and then you know that that's a place you really want to make it back to. Mm-hmm. And then when you're in there boot scouting, you can probably change that and add that to where you really zone in on, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think that's a good idea, man. And really, you know, zoom in and make sure you know exactly where that trail is that crosses, you know, mm-hmm. and put it on the trail. Maybe probably even mark your tree. And so with that, let's talk a little bit about how you hunt it. You know, how do you actually set up on a creek crossing? And I think one thing that you've got to think about here is that on a secondary creek crossing, you say, like, still same example, you've got the main stem going east and west, say, and you've got your feeder creek, that secondary creek that you're hunting is coming, it's coming south off of the east and west drainage, so it's technically feeding north but coming south, right?
Mm-hmm.
Off of that, so deer are going to be going east and west there. I think you would like to hunt a tree that is, that your wind is not blowing across that trail that goes east and west there, that mm-hmm. crosses the creek. But I think you can get away with hunting a tree that you still, like, if the only tree or your best option for a tree causes you to blow at the crossing, then what you've got to do is you've just got to shoot. What's going to happen is the deer is going to come up to the crossing and it's going to pause before it goes into the creek, more than likely. Before it goes into the secondary creek to cross, he's probably going to pause. So you want to make sure that you can shoot that deer before it crosses the creek, essentially, and mm-hmm. get your wind. So that's, like, you know, obviously the ideal situation is to not have your wind blowing at it, but sometimes it just doesn't work at a creek crossing because trees are funky.
Another thing you need to keep in mind when you're talking about wind on these type of creek crossings is that on still, slack evenings or mornings, your wind is going to suck down. So mm-hmm. If it's completely dead still, you don't want to set up with that you kind of being upstream of that creek crossing, because your wind's going to, your scent is going to drift down into that hole. Same thing as if you're hunting close to the main creek and that water is down there and it's very cold, it's also going to draw air and draw breeze. So your scent's always going to go downhill
towards the mainstream
and towards
much.
The mainstream. Yeah. So you need to keep that into consideration as well. I mean, I think on that east and west creek with the feeder creek north and south, that's your example, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would say that if you looked at that creek crossing in the creek like a compass rose, and you have a feeder creek that heads north off of the main creek, right? Somewhere south of the trail is going to be where you want to set up on a still day, because that wind's going to suck down to the south and it's going to keep you from winding any of those deer that come up to the creek. Now, Tyler, tell me about this. There's a certain consideration that you have to have when you're setting up your tree stand, because a lot of times when you're a normal hunter hunting normal deer, you're setting up and you're just assuming that the deer don't see you because they're looking straight ahead and you're up in a tree.
Mm-hmm.
But when a deer goes down and up a creek bank, sometimes they look up a lot higher than normal, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. They're natural. As they come up a creek, the natural kind of orientation of their body sends their gaze upwards maybe a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention they can't really see horizon level as they're coming up until they get above the creek bank. So the only thing they can see is halfway up the trees, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, that's where, like, you're sitting.
that's where you're sitting. So it's not great. There are some considerations for sure. I think trying to get on the back side of the tree, putting the tree between you and the creek, or the secondary creek crossing, is a really good idea if you can. I think also that for those guys who like this thing, that would probably not be anybody in this truck, getting on the ground could be a good thing, because once that deer comes up out, it's probably going to pause again and look around, and you could shoot it right there once it comes out of the creek. I think there's also some consideration to be had if you can find a big tree where you can really keep from getting silhouetted in that skyline as that deer looks up, whether you're in front or behind or whatever. At least you don't look like, you know, in the case of TR, dude, I'm just in a tree that's 6 inches around, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like this, if a big buck comes through there and he's not following a doe and really chasing her pretty good, I'm probably gonna struggle to get that deer killed.
Yeah, that's the other thing with this type of scenario too, is that you pretty much are always going to put yourself in a precarious position as far as getting seen by deer.
You like to call those PPs.
Yeah, those are PPs. So PP, you get peeped in the PP. So one of the things that you really have to think about is how are you going to like be super still and make sure that if the first deer you see isn't the one you want to kill, how are you going to let that deer get past you without just blowing you mm-hmm. up, right? And that's something I think that not setting up on the trail, which is probably a good idea no matter if you're hunting a creek crossing or not, you know, setting up off the trail a little bit mm-hmm. lets you have better shots and shot angles too, yeah. because you don't want to end up, you know, shooting straight down and only hitting one lung on something.
Yeah.
And really having a, you know, putting yourself in a tough spot. Whereas, yeah. you know, if you're back off 15, 18 yards, you still have a really very doable shot, but also just a much better trajectory for that arrow.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, like you said, I think when you talk about a bed to feed pattern, if you can find that situation, that is a good situation, because what we're running into here with what we're talking about is if you're hunting the rut and you're sitting in a great spot, right? But if you do have to blow your wind at the trail, the crossing there, there's a very strong likelihood that it, you know, a doe could be the first deer to come through, mm-hmm. right? And you got a buck right behind her. She's going to be having to be pushed pretty hard to just run through your wind without giving too much regard to it. So something else to be thought about. Like if it's heavy, heavy rut, I mean, I don't know. It's just one of those things that, like, you just got to go hunting sometimes, and you got to think, I'm going to put myself in the best position, and if God wants me to kill a deer tonight, then that's what it's going to be, you know? Sometimes you just got to hunt the best position you can, the best spot, the best way you know how to, and if it's your turn to kill a big buck, he might come in just cruising, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think the last thing I do is, like, what kind of icon do you normally mark this with?
So we talked about this earlier. There's a couple, because I used to mark them with trail markers, but actually there is a crossing icon that's real cool and shows, I think, a gate or something like that, but it says crossing on it. I like to take a picture, too. That way I can see if it changed or something like that. But I usually will mark this and turn it blue because it's something to do with water, and then put a crossing icon on there, and then I will take a picture and save that as well, and put that and then save it as that, and then I'm ready to rock and roll and can know, you know, where that exactly is when I go in there in the dark to hunt that, you know, feed to bed pattern
yeah.
in the morning, because I actually like to hunt these a lot in the morning.
Yeah. I think, you know, another thing I think that would be handy is to mark the tree that you're going to be sitting in and take a picture of it as well to help you out, because trees can be confusing, man, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the thing is, they're constantly changing, except for a couple months in the summer and a couple months in the dead winter, you know? Like, mm-hmm. they're pretty much in a constant state of change. So a good thing to have is, like, you know, a picture that shows essentially at least like the bark and maybe a big part of the tree or whatever, so that you can kind of recognize that tree when you get in there. But that's the same way. You use the roost for that one, right?
That's right. That's a roost tree. That's where I'm going to be sitting, maybe just like a big old Tom. If you're into this kind of stuff and feel like you need more, you can check out our Map Scout Challenge series on YouTube. These are the most comprehensive scouting videos on the internet.
Make sure and subscribe while you're there. And also remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.